When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, Past Life Regression. What happens to us when we die? Who were we before we lived? Two questions with possibly a very similar answer. Are we able to channel our past lives and grow from the information given to us? Today we discuss the paranormal, past lives, and how we can use the information we're given to improve our lives with certified hypnotist Amanda Schertzer.
Well, I'd say, you know, my parents are a little out there. And they've always been open to anything paranormal. Mm-hmm. I remember them saying that they used to test us for psychic ability when we were little. You know, those cards that have the different symbols on them.
Sure, like tarot cards? Or
no. What are those called?
Yeah.
They have like a circle or wavy lines.
Yes, like what they use at the beginning of Ghostbusters. You know, the wavy lines. Yes. Yep.
So they would test us by asking us, what's this card? And then we would guess.
And then they
said we were
you.
Actually. Oh gosh, no, they were kind. Okay. They did not do that. They said we actually tested fairly high for that. So, you know, having parents that were always interested in that, of mm-hmm. course, you're gonna be open to that. The earliest memory I have of anything paranormal, I think, was when I was about 3 or 4. I woke up one morning, and it was a beautiful day. I could tell the breeze was blowing. I guess my window was open. And so I stood up on my bed to peek out of the window, and I saw something move across the backyard that I didn't, you know, it wasn't a person. I didn't, it wasn't anything I'd ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of looked like a sheet. If it stood, you know, corner to corner upright, you know, vertically.
Okay.
And sort of undulated and moved like across the yard. Only you could see through it. Like it was white, but you could see through it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm 3 or 4. I don't know what that is.
Sure.
So my brain, you know, said, I guess it's a sheet that has blown off someone's clothesline.
Sure.
And so I went in the kitchen and I told my mom, somebody's sheet, you know, came off their clothesline. Mm-hmm. And she just looked confused, and she was probably making breakfast or something, and she didn't know what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first memory I have of seeing anything weird. I did hear years later that in that particular house, my older brother had been sick once. He had pneumonia or something. He was running a high fever, but he asked my parents the next, you know, one morning, after he was sick, who that old lady was that walked through his room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a door that you couldn't use anymore. It was blocked off, but he said that she had walked through it. And of course there wasn't a woman.
Yeah.
Somebody has, but they had heard that there was an old woman that lived there before that had died. So there are all kinds of experiences from my earliest memories. Mm-hmm. There have always been strange.
What made your parents curious about you guys having a psychic ability to even do a testing or try to gauge that? What was their tip off? Did you ever ask them that?
Well, I think they were interested since they were young, mm-hmm. Both, you know, growing up in families where they went to church and, you know, did the normal things. Mm-hmm. But my father said that his mother was asked not to bring him back to Sunday school because he asked too many questions. So they were just very curious people, and they always wanted to know, you know, what else is there? What else?
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be something more to this, because sure. This doesn't make sense. What we're being told
mm-hmm.
doesn't make sense to us. We want to know more.
Yeah.
So they've always explored all of that. And they're very science-oriented, too. They're not just, like, checking out psychic things and ghost things. They were very into technology mm-hmm. and, you know, space exploration. They were very into all that. So
you had that experience in your house with the sheet incident. And obviously that's a little bit bizarre and would make you start questioning, well, what is going on here? I'm granted you're real little at the time. And then your brother has that. Did your parents ever have any experiences in the house growing up?
Not in that house, but my mother lived in a house once in Pennsylvania. They're mm-hmm. from Pennsylvania. And the house that she lived in growing up was on a path that the soldiers from Gettysburg took
mm-hmm.
after the battle, when they were all wounded and hurt.
Sure.
Whatever, and they went through that area. She never told me the stories from that house. And unfortunately, she's deceased.
Mm-hmm.
But my uncle, when I was an adult, I finally had a chance to ask him what happened in that house, because my mother would not tell me. She didn't want me to be scared.
Okay.
And he told me that his eyes got really big. And he said, the thing he remembered the most is he would come home from school and that my mom would drag him into her bedroom
mm-hmm.
and it would be, just be torn apart. Just clothes everywhere, drawers open, everything a mess. And he would say, "You better clean this up. Mom's going to get so mad at you. Why did you do this?" And she just shook her head and said, "I didn't do this. This keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do it." So, I don't know. From what he said, there was, and I think from what my dad said as well, there supposedly was an old woman in the house, haunting the house. Mm-hmm. I don't know what she was looking for.
So from a very young age, your mom also had experiences too. So this was when you guys came into the picture and everything. It wasn't something that was like a foreign concept, and it wasn't something like, no, this doesn't exist.
Right.
She knew it existed.
Yes.
Maybe not super comfortable talking about it, but it was part of the lexicon of what exists out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And now that I think about it, my dad had an experience too. Well, it was just normal for him growing up. The house that they had bought, the house that my dad grew up in, that my grandparents bought, had been owned by someone who committed suicide in the house.
Mm-hmm.
He hung himself in the attic of the house. Oddly enough, my grandfather told the story. He was very grateful to this man, because at the time this guy hung himself, my grandfather had scarlet fever
mm-hmm.
and he was in bed, and the doctors didn't expect him to live. And he said he heard some people running down the street saying, there's this guy's name, Rudy Shutter.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy Shutter's just hung himself in the attic. So my grandfather, as sick as he was, got out of bed and went to the window to try to see if he could see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he credits that with saving his life. He got up.
Wow.
Got up and started moving around, and he got better from then. So they eventually bought the house. the house moved. They moved the house somehow. Mm-hmm. And so that's the house that my dad grew up in.
Wow.
And what I didn't like about the house was that when we visited, I had to stay in the room with the door to the attic. So
sure.
I never saw anything. But when we would eat in the kitchen, mm-hmm. they had a little table, and the back door was right beside the table where we would eat. And then they had a door to the basement where, of course, they used to fuel the furnace or something.
Okay.
I guess it was the old, really old, where you had to put coal in something.
Sure.
So we would be sitting there eating, mm-hmm. and the back door would come open. And without missing a beat, my grandfather, mid-chewing, would just stand up and say, "Come on in, Rudy." And he'd shut the door and he'd sit back down and just continue eating. And then a minute later, the door to the basement would open. And he would say, "Wipe your feet on the way back up."
So. It was just like, that's part of the family. It's, yeah, just completely welcoming him in there as if it yeah. was nothing odd about it.
Yeah. And all the kids at the table with their eyes like saucers.
Yeah. God. So your parents, you know, they were curious about psychic ability and things of that nature. What was your thoughts at that when you were younger as far as having abilities and being sensitive and able to kind of pick up on some things that maybe the everybody else doesn't, or not everybody, but a lot of people don't?
Yeah, I guess I was open to it, but I never took time to really investigate. I loved reading ghost stories. Mm-hmm. My grandmother had a huge box of, there was a Time Life series. I don't know if you've heard of it or remember it, but it was like a series of books. And it was like witchcraft and ghosts and telepathy. Like each
wow.
book had it. I would just pour through those. I loved mm-hmm. all that. And I've always been sort of, you know, my parents were very scientific
sure.
minded. So I always try to look for something that makes sense mm-hmm. before I decide something's paranormal.
Yeah.
But some things, you know, you just don't know.
Sure. What do you consider? You consider yourself sensitive, empathic, psychic, anything of those natures?
I do, but in a way where it either takes me by surprise mm-hmm. or I have to concentrate really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I am a channel.
Sure.
But, you know, I studied hypnotherapy. Mm-hmm. I have a hypnotherapy certification. So sure. I learned the science of sort of getting in that state mm-hmm. where you're receptive. So that's what I have to do
sure.
in order to tap in. I can't just be at the grocery store and somebody says, "How's my grandfather?" And I'd be like, "Oh, he says he's fine."
And by the way, there's a sale on grapes in aisle 4.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, don't miss it. So prior to studying all that and getting a certification in that area, had you had experiences where you just, it was different. It was something where it obviously wasn't at the grocery store, but just in life, was there anything that you walked away from going that something just happened there that really kind of sparked that curiosity to dig as far as you have dug?
Yeah. I remember once when I was young and my parents, I must've been around 6. My parents were looking for a new house. We were going to move, and we were in Little Rock in the historic district mm-hmm. looking at the big old homes from the 1800s.
Sure.
And we got out of the car and we walked up, and I was fine until we got in the house. And then I had an overwhelming feeling of dread.
Mm-hmm.
And I started crying and I said, I can't, I want to go. I want to go. And my mom's like, "No way. Look at this house. We mm-hmm. have to go, you know, let's go." And she said, "Well, do you want to go upstairs and see the kitchen?" And I said, "No." And I ran out. I ran to the car and my dad had to sit out there and wait with me.
Yeah.
Because it just felt wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing really quantifiable. It's not like I wasn't the kid in Sixth Sense who could see
sure.
ghosts, but I can get,
yeah,
you know, bad feeling.
Have you ever had it where something like that, you had those feelings at that house and later on you found out that how they were justified, those feelings were justified?
That's a good question.
Like some confirmation to it?
Not that particular one. I can't think. The only, I don't know. My grandparents' house was creepy once you got to a certain point in the steps.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess in the back of my mind, I knew the story behind it. I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
It's an interesting question, an interesting one to think about, where it's like, oh, and you find out later, oh, yes, and seven people were murdered in here, but or the serial killer lived in the house or something like that. Because I wonder how many times that happens where people have those experiences, those feelings of dread, panic, and it's not just a panic attack. It's not just this or this. You are authentically feeling something. And there's a reason you're feeling it, but how often is it just dismissed or you're too young to really dig into it any deeper? But the reason for it is just left unknown.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that probably happens quite often, I would guess. As you dug into this more and learned about being a channel and things of that nature, walk me through that process. How does one dive into that more? And is that something that like anybody could do, like any, or does it take, you need like a certain skill level to do it or a certain level of sensitivity? Like not anyone can just go be a professional basketball player. Like there's a talent there. There's a skill there. There's an ability there. A lot of times I think the same is true with this sort of area where some of us have really great seeing and that would allow you to do certain professions that require that and would also then exclude you from ones that disqualifies you from doing something like that. And being a channel, does someone naturally need to have that ability to begin with?
I really believe that we all have the ability. Mm-hmm. The only thing it depends on is whether you're interested enough in developing it that mm-hmm. you'll practice. It's just like basketball. Only with basketball, you know, there's a height sort of requirement.
Sure.
With this, I really don't think there's any requirement to it. I really believe anybody could do it.
Okay.
It's just that I took the time to sit down and practice. And I did. I just started practicing.
Yeah.
When you practice, to get my hypnotherapy certification, we had practice partners. Mm-hmm. And from the first week that we started, he made us do hypnosis on the other person. Mm-hmm. So every week I had a hypnosis session. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the 9 months of that, I had all that practice in getting into that state. Mm-hmm. You can access things. And one of the things he does is one of the hypnosis sessions that you have to do is a past life regression because people ask for that. Mm-hmm. So once you know that you can get in that state and once you know that you can access things that you didn't know you could access, then it sort of opens the door to what else can I do when I'm in this space?
How difficult was it to learn how to get into that space?
It really is not difficult. I feel like I can do that with clients mm-hmm. in one session, one long session. Mm-hmm. Once you get to that state, it's kind of like a radio station. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just going to set myself to that frequency, that station, and then I can get it. But it still does take practice. And a lot of the times, you don't know whether what you're getting is real or not.
Sure.
So I don't know. You just have to, it's trial and error. And it helps when you have feedback. Mm-hmm. Feedback is really important because if somebody's, you know, I have friends that'll say, okay, I'm holding an object. Can you tell me what it is? And I'm like, I don't do that. I don't know how to do that.
It's like a carnival sideshow or anything like that.
But if you try it and you keep trying it and you get feedback so that you learn, well, I was feeling this sort of way and mm-hmm. I felt like I was more tapped in and I got the answer right at that time, mm-hmm. then you can sort of hone it to where you're accurate more often. So I really, honestly, anybody can do it. Mm-hmm. It's just that a lot of people, most people just don't, they're not interested. Sure. So they don't take the time.
When you're talking with a client and you're getting information from them, and you had mentioned sometimes you don't know if what you're getting is real. How do you determine that? And if what you're getting is not real, what are they giving you? Where is that information coming from if it's not based on something?
Right. I think a lot of it, you have to consider your subconscious, mm-hmm. especially today where we can get online and find out anything about anything. We have so much stored in our subconscious. Mm-hmm. So you have to consider that what you're getting, if it's not accurate to your client, maybe coming from your subconscious. And mm-hmm. you have to work really hard to not let your mind influence,
mm-hmm.
the reception of, or, you know, you can think of it as tapping into a field of information. Are you tapping into the field of information? Or are you drawing from your subconscious? And like I said, it just takes practice and feedback
mm-hmm.
to realize which you're doing.
Do you ever run into an issue where someone is pouring out a stream of information? It very likely was something that did not occur to them, basically a false memory. But they wholeheartedly believe that this happened to them. I mean, how do you deal with something like that where it's kind of coming out this way, but the likelihood of it being real is not really in the cards?
Well, when you're doing hypnotherapy, I always tell my clients that you may remember a past life or it may just be made up.
Mm-hmm.
But the point here is the therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is you're taking your issues that you have in this life, questions that you want answers to. Why do I keep repeating this pattern? Why does this keep happening to me? And when you see them in a different life and you get a different perspective of it, you see mm-hmm. it as happening to a separate person. I mean, it's you, but it's a different life. It's already mm-hmm. happened. So when you get that perspective, you get answers mm-hmm. for your current life. So whether it's true or not, essentially, I tell them it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing here is we're helping you.
Yeah.
So
essentially, you're working through things through the therapy portion of it. And whether these things happened or not, if the person inherently is believing these things to their core and that's how they're operating, those things still need to be worked through, whether they actually occurred or not, for them to essentially make progress.
Yes. Yes. And it, you know, even if it's not true and you're believing it, is it helpful mm-hmm. to you? I mean, if I can tell it's not helpful yeah. to them, it's detrimental to them, then we'll work through that.
Sure.
But yeah, it doesn't really matter whether it's valid or not. So that's how I approach that.
Sure.
It's the benefits.
Past lives are always a very interesting subject to talk about. And there's a lot of different takes on, well, where is this coming from? Is this a past life? An interesting thought that I've had just by talking to the thousands of people that I do sometimes is it a past life that's coming through when someone is talking about something in detail that they really should have no knowledge of? And there's just no way that they would. Is that a past life, or is it? Also, could it be the possibility something is basically using that individual as a vessel to communicate their story through them? It doesn't mean that that person necessarily lived that past life, but they're basically the conduit, and it's almost like a download of information. Where
absolutely, I believe that's entirely possible. When you're having a past life experience yourself, well, I've had dozens personally, my mm-hmm. own past life experiences, and I categorize mine in a couple different ways. One, I really feel like that was me.
Mm-hmm.
That's very strong. I have a very strong feeling that that was me and that actually happened. There's another kind where you're more like an observer
mm-hmm.
and you're just being played a movie, like you're being shown and you can relate to it and you kind of feel like you're a part of it, but you don't feel really strongly that it's you.
Okay.
So yeah, sure. I believe that's entirely possible that there's somebody that has a message
yeah.
that they want to get across. And the bonus to that is, can we use their story to help you?
Sure. Is there ever a way to differentiate between the two type of experiences? If someone's having essentially kind of like that download and something else is communicating versus this was me, or is that more of a personal thing that only that individual is going to be able to kind of make that call?
I feel like if the person doesn't 100% relate to what they're getting,
mm-hmm.
then I'd be pretty confident to say that's not you.
Okay, sure. In your own case, in your own story, how did that begin for you? When did you first have an experience where you thought this might be a past life experience or a past life memory that I'm accessing here?
I guess I've always been drawn to England since I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Any books with little English girls, Alice in Wonderland, of course, you know, everybody's going to like Alice in Wonderland as a child. But
Alice in Wonderland is creepy as hell.
There were, you know, my books of choice were books that had little English girls, little stories about English girls. And then as I got older, I felt a very strong pull to go visit England specifically. Let's see, when I was probably not until I was in my 20s, I bought a book, and I can't even remember who wrote the book, but there was a past life regression script in the back, and I typed it up and I printed it out, and we went to visit, my younger brother and I went to visit my dad, who lived in Canada at the time, and my stepmother agreed to read this past life script out for me, because I'd never had a chance to do one. And I saw, of course, I should have told you the English past life, but the one I saw was one in France. I saw a past life in France. It was very real. And I totally believe that happened. Mm-hmm. So that was my first thing. And then I didn't do anything with that for a number of years until, I guess I was in my 30s. I had had my oldest child was just a baby, and my husband was working late, and so he was, my son was asleep, my husband was gone, and I'd found a past life regression online, and I lay down on the couch and I put it on and I listened to it, and that's when I saw the English past life. I had fallen in love with my older brother's best friend, who, you know, basically they had grown up together and we saw him a lot. And he had gone off, you know, to college, and he was back, or wherever he had gone, he was back. And I knew that something had changed. And I had a very strong feeling that he was going to ask me to marry him. And then it shifted to a scene where I was walking along in the woods and I saw a group of men with their rifles. They were hunting, mm-hmm. whatever, and there was something on the ground. And in the regression, I thought it was a tree had fallen or something. Mm-hmm. I just saw it was part of a log or something. And then I discovered it was that man. He had been killed in the hunting accident. And the pain of that was so real.
Mm-hmm.
I was crying. And when that regression was over, I realized I had been crying in real life.
Sure.
I just boo-hooed my way through that, and I had a terrible headache. And so I emailed the guy that did the regression, and I said, I have an awful headache. What is going on? Is this normal when you have a past life regression? And he said, usually a headache means like repressed memories.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was just like, I finally found out why I wanted to go to England. I wanted mm-hmm. to find him. I didn't know, like, I guess I didn't. Subconsciously or superconsciously, wherever that information is or lives mm-hmm. in your soul or whatever you want to call it, I just felt like I needed to find him. And once I had that regression, I lost my desire to go to England.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
And I had gone to England before that, and expecting something big to happen mm-hmm. and nothing happened. And I was so disappointed because I just thought that was the reason why I was.
Sure.
I had that draw, and then I had the past life regression. I thought, oh, that's why I wanted to go. I was looking for him, but he's not there.
Yeah. Does it ever happen where someone is able to identify down to a really good detail who they were? I mean, it's probably not super common. I think I've seen it on Unsolved Mysteries once or twice when we were kids. But, I mean, have you ever seen that yourself where someone's been able to really hone in on, okay, I think I know enough information, enough pieces to this puzzle, because that's what you're just putting together. And then, you know, in a time where not much was documented, then try and figure any of that out. Or does anyone ever get clues to their identity? Do they know names? Do those things ever come out?
Yeah,
in that?
Absolutely. I just did a regression last weekend, and, you know, she had names, places, not a town, but I mean, you know, you get the general, I try to get because I know I would want that.
Sure.
So I try to get like at least a country,
mm-hmm.
a time period. I have them describe the clothing so they can use that as clues.
Yeah.
And at least first name, sometimes they get last names.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they get dates very clear, ages that they were.
Mm-hmm.
So she can go off and, you know, research that, because we have the beauty of the internet. Yeah. You can find anything now.
Does it ever happen where someone gets these names and these pieces to the puzzle, and it turns out that somewhere in their lineage, this was someone that was a relative? Or is it typically just kind of random as to where people have been sprinkled throughout the world?
I think it can be both. I really think there is something to cellular memory. Mm-hmm. I think that is a component of it. Mm-hmm. My genetic history is England, Germany, France, mm-hmm. and a lot of my past lives that I've seen were in those areas. Mm-hmm. However, I've also had a Mongolian past life, okay. and a Native American past yeah. life. And I have no Native American ancestry. Mm-hmm. So I think it can be anything. And I also wonder whether, you know, your past lives that are in the places that your genes are from mm-hmm. are actually your ancestors' life memories.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, how much of that, I mean, is that a past life then? Or is this just, you know, data that's transferred? And, you know, and it's, you know, it's like back in the day when you do the credit card receipts with the carbon copy. You can only do it so many times before it gets really muddled. But I think I see a six here or whatever, and you're just kind of picking out little bits and pieces, but it's muddled, and you're never really going to get quite that clear picture of what it once was. What sort of evidence exists to that?
That's a good question. I don't think that I've ever seen anybody do a book on genetic memory in mm-hmm. past lives. That would be interesting to look up.
Yeah.
Because the big people like Brian Weiss and Dolores Cannon mm-hmm. and there's another guy. I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, they mostly just talk about past lives. They don't really, to my knowledge, the ones that I've read don't go into the cellular memory part mm-hmm. of it.
It's just an interesting, you know, concept. It's just another one of those choose your own adventure possibilities as to what is going on with something like that. Is it when someone has these memories and someone's pulling these things up, are we talking about past lives? Because you said you had more than one that you can you've accessed. Are they going in sequential order? Is there ever downtime between lives, or is it kind of like, dead, new, you're just, you know, you get hit by the bus and suddenly you're born and is, you know, you're in a hospital. I mean, obviously it's a very, you know, opinion based question, as all of this is. I'm just curious because you have more knowledge on this area than I do. So I'd love to know your thoughts on that.
Well, so from what I've learned, time doesn't really work like we experience it mm-hmm. here when we're in lives, when we're in spirit or whatever you want to call it, when we're not in a body, mm-hmm. the time isn't linear. So in my hypnotherapy professor described it like this. It's like a wagon wheel, sort of. You're the being in the center. Your soul, or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. is in the center. And then each of the spokes going out is a different life. It's a little more complicated than that. But the idea is, it doesn't matter which time you go in first. Mm-hmm. Like you don't start as a Neanderthal and then yeah. and then the next life is after that in time. And you could have a life in the future and then go back to Victorian times. And I think the reason this is because, you know, if it's true that we are here to gain experiences mm-hmm. and that's why we live lives, and there are different things that we want to learn about or different experiences we want to have, there are certain time periods that are better than others for those experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to learn what it's like to be a medical practitioner in a time where there are some new breakthroughs, then you might go, I don't know, to plague times in mm-hmm. Europe or something, you know?
Yeah. That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Amanda in part two. Do past lives move in sequential order? Is there ever any downtime? Do people ever have future lives that come to our present? What does the future hold for society's understanding of past lives? And who was the female figure standing in Amanda's doorway late one night? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.